ourselves in.
So this is Habakkuk's opening salvo. It's been fired. Look at God's response. No doubt Habakkuk here, as he brings these indictments before God, he thinks he has a case before God. And no doubt he's expecting God to come and, hey, I heard you, Habakkuk. You know what? You're right. You're right, Habakkuk. Let me come and deliver you immediately just the way you want me to deliver you. Well, let's see what God says. Verse 5. Look among the nations and see. Wonder and be astounded, for I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, who march through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are dreaded and fearsome. Their justice and dignity go forth from themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards, more fierce than the evening wolves. Their horsemen press proudly on. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle, swift to devour. They all come for violence, all their faces forward. They gather their captives like sand. At kings they scoff, and at rulers they laugh. They laugh at every fortress, for they pile up earth and take it. Then they sweep by like the wind and go on, guilty men whose own might is their God. You think things are bad now, Habakkuk? You've seen nothing yet. That's God's response. I see your complaint, Habakkuk, and I raise it. I up the ante, Habakkuk. There is more pain and suffering. Judah is going to be smashed. You're going to be taken into captivity. Men, women, and children are going to die. Things are going to get worse, Habakkuk. Much worse. Not exactly what Habakkuk was thinking here. Not exactly what he thought the response from God was going to be, no doubt. But I want you to notice something. Did you notice verse 5? Look at it again. Look among the nations and see. Wonder and be astounded. For I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. This is the essence of our struggle, church. God knows things we don't know. And we think that if God disclosed all His ways and reasons why He does the things He does, that we, mankind, men and women, us in this church, could grasp it. This is my struggle, if I'm being honest with you. I shared that with Richard and Vicky last Sunday. This is my struggle. When I start to doubt God's goodness, purposes, and His providence, at its core, when you strip it all down, at its core, it's because I am not content in not knowing the secret things that belong to the Lord. Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things belong to the Lord. I don't like that. I don't like that. I'm not content with the revealed will of God. I want to know the concealed will of God also. Am I the only one? But if there's one thing that the Lord makes clear here, is that man would have no clue what to do with God's thoughts. No clue. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, and my ways are not your ways. We would have no clue what to do with this. So what's the trick? How do we become content in knowing God's purposes in our suffering? I think as we read on here, the text reveals three steps to contentment in our suffering. There's more. I think this is a good presentation that Habakkuk gives us here on how to deal with pain and suffering. A little context first. Look at verse 12 through 17. Habakkuk launches his second complaint here. He's launched his first salvo. God answers. Now look at his second. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have ordained them as a judgment. And you, O Rock, have established them, the Chaldeans, for reproof. You who are of purer eyes than to see evil and cannot look at wrong, why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent when the wicked swallows up the man more righteous than he? You make mankind like the fish of the sea, like crawling things that have no ruler. He brings all of them up with a hook. He drags them out with his net. He gathers them in his dragnet, so he rejoices and is glad. Therefore he sacrifices to his net and makes offerings to his dragnet, for by them he lives in luxury and his food is rich. Is he then to keep on emptying his net and mercilessly killing nations forever? In other words, you're using the Chaldeans, Lord. Okay, I get that you're going to come onto Israel. I get that you're going to punish Judah. I get that. But you're using the Chaldeans. They're not your covenant people, Lord. They're Gentiles. They're more wicked than us. You're going to use a people that's more wicked than us to smash us? You don't know what you're doing, God. How can this be? Now, I want you to notice here a shift in Habakkuk's posture. Look at chapter 2, verse 1. He levels his second complaint. He says, I take my stand at my watchpost and station myself on the tower and look out and see what he will say to me and what I will answer concerning my complaint. You get the feeling that at the opening of Habakkuk's book, he's just shooting from the hip, right? It's raw emotion. Now he's a little disarmed here. Not as much as he should be, but you can see he's starting to retreat just a little bit. And he's saying, I'm going to take my position on a tower like a good sentry, like a good soldier would. I'm going to go take my post, and I'm going to look out, and I'm going to wait to hear the response from God. He's in a better position here. Look at the answer God gives in 2 through 4. And this is step 1. Step 1, how do we become content in not knowing God's purposes in our suffering? We need an eternal perspective. We need an eternal perspective. Verse 2. And the Lord answered me, write the vision, make it plain on tablets so he may run who reads it, for still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Behold, his soul, that's the Chaldean soul, is puffed up. It is not upright within him, but the righteous shall live by faith. The righteous shall live by faith. Sunday night, we looked at the book of Revelation in some detail. Revelation, it gives an account. In Revelation chapter 6, it's the beginning of the tribulation. The tribulation runs from chapter 6 through all the way through chapter 19. And at the very beginning of the tribulation, it gives an account of, at the opening of the fifth seal, there's a group of martyrs and they're under the altar. There's a group of martyrs who's been slain for the testimony of Christ. And they're under the altar, and they're having a dialogue with God himself. And they say to him, how long, O Lord, until you avenge us? They are aware of what's going on in this life right now. They took our life, Lord. Do you see what they're doing down there? Avenge us. How long? O Lord. You know what the Lord's response was? Not yet. Not yet. It's not the time. And we have got to see this, folks. We have to see this. We have got to see the end game. It's a matter of changing our perspective and seeing how it all ends. And that's what he's telling Habakkuk. Habakkuk, I'm giving you this vision. write it down. I'm giving you this vision. I have a purpose. I have a plan. And if it seems slow, wait. If in your perspective, oh man, Habakkuk, if in your perspective, in your vision, from your vantage point on that tower, if it seems slow, wait. I will smash the Babylonians. I will take care of that. And church, one day, he will smash all injustice. Then I saw heaven opened. And behold, a white horse. The one sitting on it is called Faithful and True. And in righteousness he judges and makes war. His eyes are like a flame of fire, and on his head are many diadems. And he has a name written that no one knows but himself. He is clothed in a robe dipped in blood, and the name by which he is called is the Word of God. And the armies of heaven, arrayed in fine linen, white and pure, were following him on white horses. From his mouth comes a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron. He will tread the winepress of the fury of the wrath of God Almighty on his robe and on his thigh. He has a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. It's an eternal perspective. He's coming. And we wait. And this is the edification of the church over and over and over again throughout all the epistles and into the Gospels. Wait! 100 years from now, each and every one of us in this room are dead. Unless the Lord comes back. 100 years from now, every single one of us, the oldest to the youngest, every single one of us are gone. 100 years is nothing. Nothing. On just recorded history of man, it's nothing. But in eternity, it's but a blip. Whatever pain and suffering that you're dealing with, and listen, some of you are dealing with some heavy stuff. Some of you are dealing with some monumental things, and I'm not going to minimize that one bit. That pain is real. That suffering is real. Evil is real. I'm not minimizing that at all. But verse 4 says that the righteous shall live by faith. And is what he's saying there is trust. That's what that means. Trust. I don't understand, but I trust. The righteous shall live by faith. It's where Paul grabs it here from Habakkuk, and he uses it in Romans and in Galatians. I don't understand it, but I trust it. I'm not going to indict you, Lord. I'm not going to bring counts against you. So step one is we need an eternal perspective. That's the first step. Then the second step is reverential awe. Reverential awe. I don't have time to read the entire chapters of 2 and 3. But in chapter 2, God pronounces 5 woes on the Babylonians. In other words, Israel is going to be rebuked by the Babylonians. That's the instrumental means that God is going to use to smash and bring rebuke upon Israel. But the Babylonians aren't getting out of this. They will not escape God's wrath. Towards the end of the chapter, Habakkuk points out that they cry out to their wooden idols, and it will never stop God's wrath. These 5 woes contain that they're going to be plundered. They're going to be filled with shame, and they're ultimately going to lose their life. Then notice verse 20. This is interesting. Notice verse 20. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. I love that imagery. The Lord's in his holy temple, let all the earth keep quiet before him. Habakkuk, I've been indicted in your first complaint. You've doubled down in your second complaint and you doubted my injustice. And I've also had to endure the cry of the Babylonians as they cry out to false gods who can never save. And he says, now would just everyone shut up. Shut up. I am in my temple. I'm the Holy One, the true and living One, the One who created all things. I'm in my temple. Be quiet. Not one more word. You ever been there?
I have.
I remember a time in Iraq. The most miserable time in my life. I had 365 days to watch that calendar flip over. Miserable. Away from my family, and I just had our third boy, Koopy, and he was only 3 months old when I left. And I was absolutely emotionally wrecked from the time I stepped foot in Diwania until the time I left. Lord, give me some peace. Lord, just let me just get through this without thinking like this or that. For this particular day, just give me some peace here. Can I just have some sleep? I'll take some sleep. Nothing. Day after day. And I hit a place. It's like, I'll just shut up. You're up there. I'm down here. That's step two. Reverential awe. Look with me, if you will, chapter 3. Again, don't have time to read it all, but back at 3, he picks up a pen and he's going to write. He's going to write a song. At this point in Habakkuk, he's been defeated. He's been defeated. He has levied complaints against God. He has used all the power of his own wisdom and his own strength as he goes to indicts the eternal Creator. And he's been defeated. And he writes a song of praise, ending with these words. Look at him, verse 17. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls. In other words, if destruction comes, and the harvest fails, and I can't even feed my own family, and we face starvation, verse 18, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. God the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on high places. To the choir master with stringed instruments. Step 3 in being content and not knowing God's purpose in our suffering is acceptance and praise. I accept it. I accept it, and I praise you. The Lord giveth, and the Lord taketh. Blessed be the name of the Lord.